Today, we're pleased to have Stefano Antonini, who is a PhD candidate at the University of Maryland College Park, advised by Brian Swingle, and has worked on holography, ADS CFT, and related topics. And today, we'll tell us about holographic measurement and bulk teleportation. Stefano, please go ahead.
Thank you, David. Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me to give the talk, and I'm very happy to meet virtually meet everyone. And today I'll be talking about some work I've been working on in the last few months with some collaborators that we'll introduce in a second. And this will be about holographic measurement and bulk teleportation. Most of what I will be talking about is in this first paper. The second paper that came out just a few weeks ago is an application to the SYK model and jetty gravity to lower dimensional holography. And I will comment about this at the end of the talk if we have time. Before getting started, I just wanted to give a quick overview of my general research interests. So I would say that my central research interest is quantum gravity. I'm interested in any sort of question in quantum gravity, even foundational questions and more, I would say, canonical approach kind of questions. But what I've been mostly focusing on is holography. And so the holographic approach to quantum gravity is what I would say is my central quantum gravity interest. And another topic I'm interested in is cosmology. My interest in cosmology is mostly from the point of view of quantum gravity. So it's theoretical interest and try to understand how to describe cosmology within quantum gravity theories. And in particular, I spend in this intersection most of my PhD, where thanks also to a collaboration with Mark Ramsdonk and his students, Peter and Chris, and my advisor, Brian, we built some models of holographic cosmology with negative cosmological constant. And more recently, I got also interested in some phenomenological aspects of these models, and so trying to understand whether these models can actually provide a good description for our universe. So today, I will not be talking about these. I will instead focus on this third interest of mine, which is quantum information. And I'm interested in it mostly from the point of view, again, of holography, where we know that quantum information is very strictly related to holography, and quantum information theoretical observables are very powerful tools to probe the holographic dual spacetime. And so where today's talk will be sitting is at the intersection between these holography and quantum information subsets of my interests. So these are the people involved in this story. Brianna, who's a postdoc at Brandeis, joined us for the second paper. Greg and Shaokai are postdocs at Brandeis. Charles is a postdoc at Caltech. Jonathan, postdoc at Yukawa Institute. And Brian, you'll know, is my advisor. So I would just start with a one-slide introduction to ADS CFT, which tells us that a quantum gravitational theory in an asymptotically ADS spacetime is dual to a conformal field theory with one dimension less, living on the asymptotic boundary of this spacetime. Now, one very important feature of holography is that it can be described using quantum error correcting codes, where bool degrees of freedom correspond to logical qubits, and the boundary degrees of freedom, so the CFT degrees of freedom, correspond to the physical qubits of this quantum error correcting code. This feature will be very important. It's very useful to understand the relationship between quantum information and holography, and it will be useful also to understand the results of this talk. Now, holography taught us many lessons about quantum gravity. For example, it taught us that quantum entanglement and space-time are very strictly related. In particular, space-time is an emergent feature, which is emergent from the quantum entanglement structure of the boundary theory. Now, one way to see this explicitly is by computing the entanglement entropy of some subregion B of the boundary. And if we do this, in order to compute this entanglement entropy, we can consider the Boole dual description, compute an extremal surface there, so some geometrical quantity, compute its area divided by 4 times the Newton's constants, and that gives us exactly the entanglement entropy of this subregion B. So there are some corrections to this formula, which I will not be talking about because they are not relevant for the purposes of this talk, but this is clearly gives us a nice relationship between geometry and entanglement. And it also tells us something more, which is if we have access to a region B, of the boundary, we can reconstruct everything which is in what is called the entanglement wedge of B, which is a bulk region, which for the purposes of this talk, I will just consider to be the region between the RT surface and the boundary region B that we are considering. The real definition of the entanglement wedge is really the it's a space-time region, which is the domain of dependence of this region that I just described, but this static picture is enough for what I will be talking about. And the fact that region B encodes everything inside the entanglement wedge is a very important feature for our results. So one could ask, since we have this nice relationship between geometry and entanglement, then how do manipulations of the entanglement structure of the boundary theory affect the bulk description? So this is the question we started from. And the hope is that the answer to this question can help clarify a little bit what's the profound interrelationship between these two quantities, this entanglement quantum information and geometry in the bulk description. Now, we know that in order to modify the entanglement structure of a theory, we can perform some measurement on it. So we can assume that we have control over a boundary theory. Now, this boundary theory can be a CFT if we are setting the continuum limit of a DSFT, or it can be the external legs of a tensor network in a tensor network model of holography. And then we can take some subregion of this boundary theory, perform some kind of projective measurement. And in principle, we know that by performing this measurement, we can access information within the entanglement wedge, everywhere in the entanglement wedge, and so erase this entanglement wedge from the bulk dual description. However, if we want to access information which is deep into the entanglement wedge, we must really measure some very complicated operator on the boundary. So this operator needs to be non-local, probably needs to be also correlated, and in quantum error correcting code language, essentially, we have to measure a logical operator of the code. So this is a very non-trivial kind of operator to measure. So one could ask, well, what if I perform some less specific measurement, for example, a very, very local measurement, then I could expect that this doesn't extract bulk information. And so is in that case, most of the bulk preserved, or is it still, for example, the entangled wedge away erased? So in this talk, I will focus on the second case where we have a local completely uncorrelated measurement, and I will make this more precise in a second, what I mean by this local completely uncorrelated measurement. But let me just mention quickly that more precisely, when I talk about measurement in this talk, I really talk about post-selection because the outcome of the measurement is very, very important in order to reconstruct the bulk description after the measurement. Okay, so what do I mean by local projective measurement here? So consider a subregion of our boundary theory, and suppose that we want to perform one of these local projective measurements. Now, in the tensor network model of holography, this is very well defined and clear. The idea is you take a subset of the boundary legs, this region A, and then project on some product state of the legs. So essentially, you project each leg independently. Now, in the CFT, this is much less clear if you take a continuum limit, because clearly this is a very, very UV kind of measurement. You are trying essentially to disentangle each point of the CFT in a spatial region, which is something clearly very hard to define and very complicated to implement. Intuitively, the idea is that you can take a CFT, discretize it on a lattice, then project on a product state of the lattice sites, and then after some regularization, take the continuum limit. So this is intuitively what one would like to do, but there is one fact which will help us to build a holographic dual without dealing with this complicated regularization process. And this fact is that clearly the post-measurement state that we are considering has no spatial entanglement because, for example, it's a product state of these different sites. And Miyagi, Takayanagi, and collaborators in this paper taught us that one set of states that have no spatial entanglement is given by Cardy states, which are the states that in conformal field theories are used to define boundary conformal field theories. So this allows us to use a prescription, which goes as follows. If you want to study the post-measurement state prepared on these time reflection symmetric slides by this Euclidean path integral, what you can do is to insert a slit along the region A that you want to measure and then impose boundary conditions which are conformal. So conformal boundary conditions around the slit. And this defines the Euclidean path integral of a BCFT, so a boundary conformal field theory. Now, I will not go into details of this prescription. Please feel free to ask me after the talk, but this would be very useful because it allows us to just use a set of conformal transformations and then build a holographic duo of the setup of our interest. Okay, so the main result we have is Boole teleportation. What do we mean by that? So suppose that we perform this LPM on some subregion A of the boundary, and we know that since it's very local, it does not extract information very deep into the entanglement wedge. Then one question one could ask, is whether the entanglement wedge of A, or at least part of it, is preserved after the measurement in the Boole description. And it's very important to notice that the Boole description after, so the whole Boole spacetime after the measurement, is encoded in the complementary region, a complement which we did not measure. So why is this important? Because we can ask the same question in a very, very sharp way, which is, well, consider a CFT on a circle and consider a region A, which is made up of two disconnected region A1 and A2 opposite on the circle, and start from the case where this region A is larger than half of the CFT. So it's a very large region. Now, before the measurement, the center of the bulk will be encoded in the region A. So the entanglement wedge of the two regions together will be connected and the center of the bulk will be part of it. Now, what the measurement does, and I will show that later in some detail, is to create what is called an end of the world brain in the bulk, which is essentially a hypersurface beyond which nothing, the bulk is completely erased. And when you perform the measurement on this region A, there are really two possibilities. One possibility is that you have these two end of the world brains, and so all this part of the bulk is erased, and the resulting bulk after the measurement is just these two small wedges, one associated with B, one associated with C. And so it's disconnected. I will call this the disconnected phase. But on the other hand, you can have this case where you're keeping a connected wedge between B and C. And notice that in this case, this whole bulk is encoded in B union C, so in the A complement region, meaning that this center of the bulk, which before the measurement was encoded in region A, is now encoded in region A complement. So what does this mean? This means that the central region of the bulk, which was not accessible from B and C before the measurement, is now accessible from B and C after the measurement, just by performing this local projective measurement on region A. Now, this is exactly quantum teleportation. What's happening is really that you're teleporting the information about the geometry and about the fields inside this geometry into the complementary region. And this can be made very precise in tensor network models of holography. I will do that towards the end of the talk. Before that, I will just study for a second the holographic picture, where we can see when this case happens and when this other case arises. So this is the setup we have, the one I just described. So we have a Euclidean CFT on a circle. We consider its path integral. We perform a projective measurement on a subregion A, which is given by the union of these two disconnected subregions, which corresponds to inserting, according to the prescription we saw before, these two slits on the time reflection symmetric slice. And then we focus on this case where we have a region A which is large, so more than half of the circumference, such that if the slice, lambda 2 equals 0 slice, so the slice where the state is prepared, has a bulk dual which is connected, then Boole teleportation is happening. Now, an important fact is that in this two-dimensional case, we have a lot of conformal symmetry, and this allows us to map the cylinder with slits to a cylinder with finite height, and the height of the cylinder will only depend on the size of this region A. Now, why do we want to do this? Because building a Boole dual of this initial setup is very, very complicated. I would not go in every detail of why that's the case, but building the boot wall of this other finite cylinder is much simpler. And so how do we build that? We can use a prescription called ADS VCFT. Is there a question? Okay. We can use an ADS BCFT prescription by Fujita, Takayanagi, and collaborators, who showed that if you want to build the bolt wall of a boundary conformal field theory, you can consider the bolt wall of the CFT and then extend into the bulk the boundary of the CFT using a dynamical boundary, which is called an end of the world brain, on which you impose Neumann boundary conditions. Now, for all practical purposes, this end of the world brain is just a hypersurface in the bulk where you impose Neumann boundary conditions and beyond which there is nothing else. And the trajectory of this brain is defined by a single parameter, the tension. And it's important to know that this tension is related to a property called boundary entropy of the Cardiff state we project on. So we will treat T as a free parameter in our theory and then consider, but let's keep in mind that whatever T we choose, it means that we are projecting on a specific Cardiff state when we perform this projective measurement. So given this prescription, it's pretty easy to build the bolt walls. I won't explain in detail how this is done, but the idea is that there are two possible phases. In one phase, we have a BTC black hole, which is essentially a torus cut off by end of the world brains. And the other case is thermally in ADS3 spacetime, which is also a torus, but cut off by a single connected end of the world brain. Now, with these little pictures here, I meant to say that the BTC phase corresponds to having, it can be shown that it corresponds to having that connected post measurement slice, which corresponds to bulk teleportation. When in the thermal ADS3 phase, we don't have a connected bulk, we have the other picture where you have only two tanning wedges. And in that case, bulk teleportation does not happen. So the question of whether we are teleporting the bulk or not boils down to, well, when is the BTZ phase is dominant? Is it possible that this BTZ phase is dominant in the partition function? This can be studied by considering the by computing the on-shell action. So this can all be done analytically in 3D gravity. And this is the phase diagram that you obtain, where on the y-axis, we have h, which is the height of that cylinder, which only depends on the size of region A. And on the x-axis, we have the tension. Now, this upper half I just erased because corresponds to the case where we are measuring a small region A, smaller than half of the circumference. So let's focus on the bottom. So what we see is that whatever size of region A you're measuring, so it doesn't matter how big is the region that you're measuring, you can always make the BTZ phase dominant. And so you can always have that connected bulk, and bulk teleportation can always happen as long as you tune the tension to be large enough. In other words, if you project your CFT on a boundary state with a sufficiently large boundary entropy, it is always possible to teleport the bulk from region A to region A complement. It's also interesting to notice that on the boundary, this phase transition corresponds to an entanglement phase transition. It's really, in some sense, a measurement-induced phase transition in the sense that you have an entanglement phase transition, which is triggered by this measurement, although it's not the dynamical kind of MIPT, which is seen in quantum many-body physics. And also, it's interesting to say that this effect is really related to something that Tim Xie studied, which is measurement-induced entanglement. Because what we're really saying is that in this BTZ phase, we are measuring two disconnected regions and inducing a lot of entanglement in the remaining two disconnected regions. While in the thermal ADS3, we are not doing that. We are measuring them, and not a lot of entanglement is generated. Now, in the paper, we study in detail this entanglement phase transition on the boundary, but I won't go into details of that. Now, please feel free to ask me after the talk. So here we saw the bull picture. Now we would like to understand a bit better why I'm talking about really quantum teleportation. So I'm sure none of you needs this, but I will just make a very quick review of quantum teleportation. So suppose that Alice wants to send a state psi of a qubit QI to Bob, and that Alice and Bob share an EPR pair, so two qubits QA and QB in a Bell state. Then what Alice can do, sorry, in a EPR state, what Alice can do is to perform a Bell measurement on her two qubits, and then communicate the outcome of the measurement to Bob, who then performs a unitary operation on his own qubit to recover the state psi. Now, the reason why I represented the Bell measurement this way is to say something that is probably very trivial, which is, for the purposes of this protocol, projecting a product state onto an entangled state or vice versa is equivalent. And in fact, what Alice does here to make a projection of a product state onto the entangled Bell state is to first entangle her two qubits and then perform an independent projective measurement on the on a computational basis. Now, what does this mean? It means that before the actual measurement is performed on this line, we have a tripartite entangled state. And this is exactly what we have when we perform our projective measurement. In fact, we have a region A, which has internal entanglement, then a region A complement, which is also entangled to region A, and that would correspond to the qubit Bob has. And then we perform a measurement on this entangled region A onto a product state. And that measurement is what teleports the information to region A complement. Now, to make this a bit more precise, we can consider Castle network models of holography. And I will start with the simplest possible model, if you can even call it like that, which is a single 513 perfect code, where you have only one bulk logical qubit encoded in five boundary physical qubits. And in particular, this logical qubit will be entangled in encoded in entanglement structure of the five serial qubits. Now, an important fact is that this logical qubit is supported on any three legs of this tensor. And in particular, you can measure the logical state by acting on three legs, but you can never access the state by acting on two legs. In particular, if you just want to measure this qubit, you can use logical operators that can be represented. For example, here, sigma x and sigma z can be represented on only three external legs. But two legs are always in a mixed state and cannot access this qubit. Now, suppose that we perform an LPM, a local projective measurement, on three physical qubits of this 513 code, after starting with a logical state, which is an arbitrary superposition of a logical zero and logical one. Then, depending on the measurement basis that we choose, there are two possibilities. In the first one, the one depicted on the left, what we're doing is measuring a logical operator on these three legs. For example, the Z logical Z that we saw before. And what we're doing is so extract this bulk information, this the state of this qubit, we're projecting it. And then this means that the remaining two legs after the measurement are on a state, in particular a stabilizer state, which does not depend on the initial logical state. So we are essentially erasing the bulk information and it corresponds to having a zero tension for the brain. On the other hand, it's interesting to notice that if you instead measure an operator which is not a logical operator, for example, a product of sigma z on the three legs, then you're not extracting the logical information, and you can show that the remaining two legs after the measurement are actually unitary, which depends only on the outcome, into a product state between zero and the logical state. In other words, what we did by performing this measurement is teleport the information of this logical qubit, which was accessible from these three legs, but not from these two legs before the measurement, into these two legs. And of course, we need the outcome of the measurement in order to access that information. So all these things can be made very, very precise, and it's done in the paper. I have a backup slide if anyone is interested in seeing how this can be formalized. But this clearly shows how teleportation is happening. And of course, this is not a good model for holography, so we want to extend it to a model of holography which works well. For example, the HAPPY code, which is a tensor network It's a code defined by a tensor network built out of 513 codes. And the way you do this is contracting external legs of these 513 codes by projecting them onto a belt state to define this quantum error correcting code, which encodes k ball qubits into n boundary qubits. And this code has been shown to reproduce pretty well some features of holography, for example, the RT prescription. Now, what we will do is to perform a measurement on a subset of these external legs, and then study the mutual information between each bool qubit and the complementary region that we do not measure. This way, we'll try to understand whether these bool qubits are still encoded into these external legs or not. So I won't go into any detail of this, but the idea is that we didn't really use a single happy code, but we use instead a stack of happy codes concatenated such that we can reduce the ratio between bulk and boundary legs and approximate better the Large N holographic limit that we have on the boundary in a semi-classical holography. And if we do that and then perform the measurements that we are talking about and study this mutual information, we observe that we can tune the tension, or in other words, we can choose how much bulk we teleport by choosing appropriately a product measurement basis, just like we did for the 513 code. And these are numerical results. So what we see here, whenever you see yellow, the bulk is still preserved. It's not erased by the measurement. Whenever you see blue, the bulk is erased. This red region is the one that we measure. And in the top here, we have only a connected region. On the bottom, we have two disconnected regions, just like the initial setup that we studied before. And on the right, we are really trying to destroy as much bulk as possible by choosing an appropriate basis, while on the left, we are averaging over measurement basis. And from these plots, it's pretty clear that measurement, that this bulk teleportation not only happens, but it's actually very, very generic. So if you just pick a basis and measure a large region, it's pretty likely that you're going to teleport the whole bulk or almost the whole bulk into the complementary region, a complement. Now, it's also interesting to see that we studied random tensor networks models of holography, and similar results are obtained. We always teleport most of it, and there are also some very nice results about non-isometric maps, which could be for the post-measurement pool-to-boundary map, which could be very interesting for black hole information paradox-related discussions. Okay, before concluding, I want to mention briefly a different setup, which is the one that we studied in this paper a few weeks ago, where we consider a 0+1-dimensional SYK model, which is a quantum mechanics model with Majorana fermions coupled all-to-all. We consider a thermofield double of it, and that's dual to a black hole in JT gravity coupled to CFT matter. Now, the interesting fact is that in this lower dimensional model of holography, you have a lot of control on both sides of the duality, and so you can really study in detail what goes on in this bulk teleportation. And what we found is that in the SYK model, if you have this double-sided black hole, where this is the horizon of the black hole, and then you measure a good amount of fermions on one side, so we have an SYK on the left and an SYK on the right. If you measure most fermions on the left, what you do is to teleport all this big wedge, so part of the interior of the black hole and part of the left wedge to the right. And in particular, you can also build explicitly a decoding operator, which allows you to probe the physics behind the horizon, both in the interior and in the left wedge. This can be done explicitly and pretty easily. And this decoding makes the wormhole essentially traversable, and so it has a lot of nice connections with other protocols that have been built to build, being studied to build traversable wormholes. And it can also shed light a little bit on how to reconstruct physics behind the horizon of the black hole. This is something that has been at the center of the discussion for the black hole information paradox, for example, and for Python's Lanche's conjectures as well. And finally, and I won't make any comment on that, but please feel free to ask me. This is also related to some holographic models of cosmology that we've been studying using brainwave cosmologies in higher dimensional space time. Okay, so what's next? Just I have a few open questions related to this setup, which is, for example, what's the correct way to physically regularize the S3CFT2 measurement setup? I mentioned that it's hard to define the measurement procedure in the CFT2, and it would be interesting to understand how this should really be done. We have some ideas about that, and please feel free to ask me later. Another question is, what's the connection between a specific measurement protocol and a specific post-measurement CARDI state that you obtain? Because that's not very clear how the two are related. And also whether it's possible to erase more bulk in the tensor networks or if you always teleport everything. Finally, we have a lot of interest in future directions. Let me mention this one, which is very exciting, I think. So these measurement use phase transition, the dynamical ones that we observe in quantum many body systems, tell us that if we perform measurement at a high rate, multiple measurements at a high rate in a circuit, we can trigger and entangle this entangled phase transition. And this model that we built could be a first step in order to study the gravitational version of it using a holography. And so try to understand what the measurement in the boundary corresponds to in the Bohr description. Another question is related to the complexity of the reconstruction of the post-measurement bulk. And this is related, as I was saying, to the black hole information paradox and the Python's launches discussion. And finally, it would be interesting to understand whether the entanglement structure that we predict here for holographic theories, so for example, this phase transition that we saw on the boundary, could be experimentally tested, maybe using quantum computers in the next decades. And so this is all I have. Thank you. And I would be happy to answer questions.
Okay, great. Let's thank Stefano for a nice talk. And we can open it up for questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand and we'll go in the order that the question is asked. Shuei, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for a very nice talk. So I have several questions to ask. First, in your notion, you emphasize this as a local measurement. May I ask what's the difference between if it is a non-local measurement, what can be different? So I'm not totally understand why, in which sense is it local?
Right, so it's local in the sense that, let me start with the last question that you asked. It's local in the sense that what we're doing here is, let's talk about the tensor network models, which is a little bit more under control. So what you're doing is taking each single qubit and measuring it independently. You're not measuring some manual body operator on the boundary. And the reason why this is what we did is that this projects, okay, there are two reasons I would say. The first reason is that if you measure an operator which is very non-local, it's more likely that you just erase the bulk and you just destroy completely the bulk dual description. That's something that it's likely to happen. While in this case, if you perform something very local, you can expect that there are at least some situations where you only destroy maybe things near the boundary, since the UV of the ball corresponds to the near boundary region. So that's one reason. And the other reason is that performing this local projective measurement allows you to have no entanglement in the post-measurement state, no spatial entanglement in the post-measurement state, because you're just projecting on a product state of the boundary legs. And that allows you to use this boundary conformal field theory prescription, which is what we base this first analysis on. Because otherwise...
So you say, yeah, please.
Because otherwise, like the fact that you don't have any spatial entanglement means that in this region A, you can consider just a CARDI state. And so this becomes the Euclidean path integral boundary conformal field theory. And so you can use a DSP CFT to build the Bohr dual. Otherwise, it's not clear even if a Bohr dual description exists, because we know that in a DSP CFT, if you... It's not guaranteed that you have a semi-classical geometrical Bohr dual, since it's a UV complete theory of quantum gravity.
Okay, thank you. And another related question is that it seems in your calculation the parameter T, the tension is heavily used. So may I ask what's the meaning of this tension T? Because it seems that you use this T to do the calculation instead of starting from the local measurement. You start from okay, we have an unknown brain with tension T, and then what's the entanglement wedge? Right. That's what's the meaning of the tension T. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So on this Bohr calculation, we use the tension T as a free parameter, because we're not looking at we're just assuming that we're projecting on some CARDI state, which corresponds to a brain with some tension. And then we are tuning the tension to see when this phase transition happens. Then we saw the same kind of effect by actually studying numerically tensor network models. But in this picture, we start from the bulk theory, and this parameter T corresponds to the boundary entropy of the specific Cardy state. So the Cardy states are used to describe these boundary conformality theories. And if you compute the entanglement entropy of some subregion of a boundary conformality field theory, you have a term which is non-extensive, which is inextensive, which is called boundary entropy, and it's a property of the specific boundary conditions that you are imposing in your conformal field theory. So it's essentially a property of the specific state, the boundary state that you have. So choosing attention of the for the brain in our bull description means that we are choosing to project on some specific boundary state which has a boundary entropy corresponding to that tension. There is actually an explicit relationship between boundary entropy and tension, which is given that boundary entropy is the hyperbolic arctangent of the tension. So if you pick a tension, you pick a boundary entropy, meaning that you keep a boundary state. So that's essentially what's the idea. And then it's an interesting question. And I mentioned that in the open questions, how you, by projecting the CFT, you actually obtain a specific Cardy state with a specific boundary entropy. I don't know exactly what's the relationship between the two. We're just assuming that we project on some Cardy state.
Okay. And one last, maybe very naive question. So in the quantum teleportation, we have a process of classical communication. Do you, in this program, do you have classical communication, or it's just a transmission of the entanglement without a classical communication?
No, we are. Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, the idea is that we are post-selecting. We're not simply measuring. So we are measuring, assuming that we project on some specific outcome. So if you want to do this practically, probably the right way to do it would be to perform, just agree with someone that you're gonna project on the, say, zero state, and then perform the measurement many times until you obtain the zero state, so, something like that. But yeah, you're right that this classical communication is very important. Like, knowing the outcome of the measurement is fundamental for the reconstruction. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen.
Okay, I think Tim, you're next.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the nice talk. I also had a question kind of related to this previous discussion. So in our work on the MIE, we found that force measurement has very different behavior from just random measurement outcome. So I was wondering if you've thought about whether, you know, the random measurement, not assuming post-selection, has any interpretation in terms of the bulk physics?
That's a very good question. We didn't analyze that case. We studied only the post-selection case, because that mm-hmm. seemed the one where you can clearly see things happening. Yeah. In particular, this fact that here we are, you really need to have a large tension, means that you, in order to see this full teleportation, implies that you really need to have an outcome which is a boundary state with a given large boundary entropy. This general case where you have just a projective measurement and you don't care about the outcome is actually, it is what we study in tensor networks, because in tensor networks, we are not postulating on a state, we're just picking a basis for the measurement. And for example, in this happy code story, we're just picking some basis in these numerical results. Yeah. We just pick a basis and see whether perform this measurement and see whether you obtain this
right. But I think in this case it's kind of specific to the fact that the happy code is made out of, well, usually made out of stabilizers, right? Because it's only in that case that the measurement outcome doesn't really matter for the entanglement structure, right?
Right.
But for a generic, you know, interacting CFT, I think the outcomes do matter.
Yeah, I think you're right, and this is clearly a consequence of this result, right? Like, if you just measure on some basis that might include different boundary states or something like that, and you obtain different boundary states, you obtain different results. So yeah, the outcome definitely matters. And it would be interesting to understand if there is some more general prescription. This is a very specific prescription that related to, in this continuum case, to projecting on boundary states.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't project on a boundary state, actually that's something we've been thinking a little bit about lately. We just started discussing about this, that if you don't project on a boundary state, first, it's not guaranteed that you have a bool dual at all, because you might just be breaking completely the conformal symmetry and you might not have a bool dual. Or maybe if you project on something which is in some sense close to a boundary state, for example, a boundary state plus some other local operators insertions, then in that case, it might be that you still keep this bool dual description, but maybe you must include other features, for example, mother on the brain or some shell of mother interacting with the brain. So these are definitely setups that are interesting to study. And I think the answer to what happens if you don't care about the measurement outcome is an interesting one. But I also think that if you don't know, if this bool teleportation is happening, but you don't know the measurement outcome, then I really doubt that you can access from the boundary the remaining bulk, because it would mean essentially that you have superluminal communication, right? It would mean that you're performing quantum teleportation without a classical communication, which I think it's not possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Alex, go ahead.
Hey. So this plot on this figure is interesting, I guess. So it at large, somehow going to large tension like helps you do this teleportation. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's already been some discussion of this, but in the boundary, this tension parameter already has this meaning of this boundary entropy. And I guess intuitively we sort of think of, you know, boundary conditions with a large boundary entropy are associated with like many degrees of freedom being kind of localized at this boundary of the CFT.
Right.
And so I was wondering if there's just like an interpretation of why sort of having this many degrees of freedom located at this boundary is helpful for doing teleportation, just like purely at a quantum information or boundary level.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I've been asking myself the same question. I am not sure that what the right answer to this question is. One possibility could be that having many degrees of freedom localized close to the boundary where you're projecting implies that when you perform the projection and just erase part of the CFT, most of the bulk was in some sense already encoded near the boundary of the region that you're measuring. And so in some sense, you are already keeping that description of the bulk space-time by just performing a measurement with a lot of boundary degrees of freedom. But yeah, it's a very good question. I don't have a complete answer to that.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. So this is the end.